The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Well, now, the Office of the Ombudsman is marking 40 years of investigations into public bodies since its founding in 1984. The office investigates complaints from people who feel they've been unfairly treated by public bodies, including the likes of the HSE and the government departments. And that has led to a wide variety of cases, from those comparatively less serious, including a lost wedding dress, to the more serious complaints around the health service and social welfare. Now, to bring us through a flavour of what has come across the desk of the Ombudsman for the past 40 years is the current Ombudsman, Ger Deering. Ger, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat. Thanks very much.
Now, you might remind us of what the role is properly.
The role is really to where an individual is dealing with the state and has a difficulty or can't get a response or is unhappy with the response that they've got. They can come to the Ombudsman and we're in a position to investigate. We're independent and we're impartial. So we're not a champion. We're in the middle. So we look.
So you might say no to somebody and say you've no case.
We could say that, yes, what you got was what you were entitled to. But much more than what the person applies for, we also look at how they were treated. We look to see where people are treated with respect and with dignity okay. in their dealings with the public body. So it's about the standard of service as well as the actual services.
Who is excluded from your process?
Well, just maybe to say first, who's included is the vast majority of public bodies. If a body is funded by the public purse, really they're generally under our remit. That even includes nursing homes, and many people wouldn't expect nursing homes to be in because they're funded very much through the public purse as well. But semi-state bodies and, you know, certainly airlines and organisations like that don't come within our remit. The revenue commissioners would come within our remit, yes.
Okay. Yeah. So any exclusions then that we should know about? If you had a complaint as an army soldier, for example.
Yes, as an army soldier, you would go to the Defence Forces Ombudsman. There are other ombudsman institutions, for example, there's the Financial Services and Pensions Ombudsman that deals with private sector pensions and also banks and institutions like that. The Defence Forces Ombudsman would deal with the situation that you've talked about there.
Typically, how many cases come across your desk every year?
We get in the region of, we had been receiving around 4,000. It's increased in the last few years. And I gather this year, it looks like we'll be close to 5,000 complaints. There's been a significant year-on-year increase in the number of complaints we receive.
Now, is there a particular bar that you have to get over before you can make a complaint to the Ombudsman?
Well, we would expect people, and not just expect, but they have to make a complaint to the body concerned first. So you go back to the public body that you had the issue with, you make your complaint to them. If you don't receive a response for them, or if you're unhappy with the response, then you can come to us. Also, people are expected to come to us within a year, but there is some discretion around that where there's a valid reason why somebody couldn't make the complaint within the year.
Now, 40 years of the office, the first Ombudsman was Michael Mills, who was the political correspondent with the Irish Press. His relationship with the Taoiseach would not have been the most cordial, because he used to write about him all the time. Himself and Dick Walsh of the Irish Times were like nemesis almost for Charlie Hyde. But anyway, Michael Mills was appointed Ombudsman and made a good fist for an innovator. He had to do it all. He had to do it from the ground up.
Absolutely. There's a very interesting book he wrote actually called Hurler on the Ditch, which sets out the early days. And it wasn't all plain sailing. And we should never take anything for granted, even offices like the Office of the Ombudsman, because internationally we've seen some pressure. And actually, in the early days of our office, Michael Mills did come under some pressure and there were cuts to his budget.
The aforementioned Charlie Hyde.
Indeed, yes.
The public are outraged by this attempt to curb the Office of the Ombudsman, the funding was restored.
It was. The staff was actually halved at that stage. And then, as you say, the funding was restored. And thankfully, we haven't had that situation arise since.
Now, the book recounts all sorts of cases. Some of them, you might regard them as frivolous, but very important to the individuals involved. Tell me about the wedding dress.
Indeed. As you say, some might consider that frivolous, but actually my own daughter got married this year, so I know the importance of a wedding dress and these matters. They matter to the people concerned. And it's a kind of a throwback in the sense of the person posted the wedding dress and the bridesmaids' dresses just from one county to another. She posted them to have them altered, the sizes altered. Unfortunately, they got lost in the post. Now, I should stress as well, Pat, we used to deal with complaints about the postal service that time because it was Post and Telegraph. So it was a public service we don't now deal with on post complaints anymore. But anyway, the dress went missing. To be fair, the staff of the postal service at the time went out of their way and searched and searched. The bridal party had to come to Dublin several times. It was found, I gathered, I think the night before, one day before the wedding. Where we really intervened, though, later was this person had a considerable expense coming to Dublin, staying in hotels, searching sorting offices and all that. So eventually, after some intervention, the postal service at the time provided a compensation to her. But more importantly, she had her wedding dress and her bridesmaids' dresses for the big day.
Now, there are more, obviously, serious complaints. I mean, for example, an outdated referral process, hospital appointments and cancer diagnosis delayed. And, a diagnosis delayed is possibly a death sentence.
Very important, very important. And that's quite recent. That's in the last few years. It's not the early years of the office. That was where a person had had a transplant. And I wouldn't have been aware that apparently if you've had a transplant, you are more susceptible to cancer. So for that reason, her consultant referred her to another part of the hospital. The referral was sent by letter within the hospital, didn't reach where it was meant to reach. She came back for another appointment, same thing happened. Eventually she came back and she was sent directly for the referral, and unfortunately she had actually contracted cancer. Now she came to us, not because really we could do much for her, but she did not want this to happen to other people. So we investigated and we made recommendations to the hospital. The hospital decided that they would put in a new printer and a better distribution system, and we suggested that that wasn't the best way to resolve this. So now I'm pleased to say there's an actual electronic referral system within the hospital that's checked on a daily basis. So that shows the importance of people actually complaining and notifying
and
us.
And it's not just the compo, it is system reform.
Exactly, it's very important.
A man had 46,000 of a pension payment backdated to his date of eligibility. Why was he denied?
What happened there was he went to the social welfare at the time. He turned 66 and he believed or thought he was entitled to a contributory old age pension or a contributory pension. And but whatever transaction or whatever conversation happened in the office that day, he came away believing he wasn't and then didn't actually apply. When he turned 70, somebody again said to him, I believe you are entitled. He went back to social protection. It transpired that he was actually entitled to the pension. And there was a record at least that he had attended the office on the previous occasion. So initially, social protection said they would backdate it for 6 months because that's what they normally do. But we intervened and said we don't think that's reasonable, given that it wasn't that he hadn't applied. He had made the attempt and had got the wrong information.
Now, there's a case about a 70-year-old who was denied money by an official who thought the money would be better spent, really, on younger people.
Yes, I mean, I hope that's a sign of the times. It's a number of years ago. I'd like to think it wouldn't happen today, but it was where chief executives, as they are now, or county managers, had a certain discretion in relation to grants. So there were grants available for adapting people's homes, and this person applied for the grant. And as you say, the manager decided that, well, at 70 years of age, this wasn't the best use of money to adopt somebody's home. Quite an extraordinary attitude, really.
A water supply issue resolved for an elderly couple. What was the issue and how quickly was it resolved?
Yeah, the issue there was really where there were two counties involved and the water supply had been coming from one county to the other. Due to remedial or a new scheme being put in place, the water was then travelling in a different direction, not in the direction of this family or these couple. So they weren't able to receive a water supply. We engaged with both councils and common sense prevailed. And actually one of the councils then provided a supply to the couple.
Now, there have been some very important interventions by the Ombudsman. The question of domicile, explain.
Yeah, in fact, this goes right back. Michael Mills was only 2 years in office in 1986 when he drew attention to this extraordinary, I think, common law rule, if you want to call it that. But it basically stated that a woman was domiciled where her husband lived. That mightn't sound important, but it's extremely important because that meant, and there was no divorce in Ireland at the time, so people couldn't, a woman couldn't get divorced and seek rights in her own right.
And if someone was divorced overseas, it wouldn't be recognised here.
That's correct. So even if they were divorced, as you say, in that circumstances, so if that man lived in England and his wife lived here, maybe with children still, the state deemed her to be domiciled in England. She may never have set foot in England, but she was domiciled under this rule. That had serious consequences if you were applying for social protection. You technically didn't live in the country, even though you may have lived here all your life. The first ombudsman, Michael Mills, as you mentioned, drew attention to that back in 1986, and I'm glad to say common sense prevailed and that rule, it had to be legislated actually to remove it.
There are all sorts of very interesting cases. A retired teacher received compensation for loss of purchasing power after delays in receiving an allowance that he was entitled to.
That's right.
And he lost purchasing power.
Yeah, and it was over a long number of years that he hadn't actually received this allowance. So by the time he got the allowance, these were the days of very high inflation. The value of the money was an awful lot less. So the government was only willing to pay the amount, whereas when our office intervened, again, the common sense prevailed. And
in other words, if you could buy a bar of chocolate when the allowance was being paid for a shilling, and now the bar of chocolate costs 2 shillings.
Exactly. So he'd lost.
He'd
lost, even in getting his money back, he had lost. So he was compensated for the loss of that, the value of that money.
€32,000 of a nursing home bill, the person was told the costs would be covered and were not.
Yeah. What actually happened was the person was in hospital and he had had an accident. He also had a disability and he was in hospital. He didn't need to stay in hospital, so, and this often happens, he was moved to a nursing home. But neither he nor his family were told that he was being moved into a private nursing home or on the private
bill.
For which he would have to pay. Nobody mentioned this. A number of months passed, and eventually a bill was landed to the family for €32,000. Again, we had to intervene. It took some time, but eventually that amount was written off on the basis that it was very unfair to present somebody with a bill in a situation where they thought the accommodation and the services had been paid for.
So I presume the HSE then had to pay that bill.
I think the private operator actually wrote it off was the outcome from that, yes.
My goodness.
Yes, I think certainly that's where our involvement ended.
Yeah. Now, talk to me about, we mentioned water supply going from two different counties and switching, and you resolved that one. Is Uisce Éireann in your remit now?
Uisce Éireann is not in our remit, no.
Why not?
That was something that the Peter Tindall was ombudsman at the time when Uisce Éireann was set up, and he certainly made very strong arguments that it should be. I think there still is an argument that it should be.
There's a very strong argument.
Yes.
They are,
yes.
A government service. Because you have the opposition jumping up and down saying someday Uisce Éireann and Irish Water could be privatised. And the government has said again and again and again, no, it will not. Water will not be privatised. So if it'll never be privatised, it surely makes the case that Uisce Éireann is a body that should be within the remit of the Ombudsman.
I would agree that it should. And in fact, those services were under the Ombudsman's remit when local authorities had the full role of providing water. So there is that argument for sure.
There's a very interesting case. You can't know every case that went across the desk of the various ombudsmans over the years. And ombudsman is not a male term.
That's absolutely correct. It's gender neutral.
Gender neutral, Swedish term.
That's,
yeah. Legal costs paid by the Department of Justice. A man received compensation for legal costs incurred due to an error by the Department of Justice regarding a misattributed letter. You familiar with that one?
Yes, I don't remember the full details of it, but certainly it was that he wasn't getting traction, if I can put it that way, with the department. They wouldn't engage with him until he engaged. The letter should not have been sent to him, and he shouldn't have received the contents. But when he engaged with the department, he wasn't getting engagement until he engaged legal representation.
Okay. And that would be fairly typical of the kind of thing that you would be entitled to use the ombudsman's service.
Well, where somebody has incurred a cost that they shouldn't have had to incur.
I mean, there are great things. A retrospective scholarship awarded. A student received a scholarship after being misinformed about eligibility for a Trí Gaeilge scholarship. He was entitled to apply, was told no. Then he got a retrospective scholarship.
Right, over a number of years, yeah.
Which is good news. More broadly, discrimination against cohabiting couples ended.
Yes. That was there was a time when if you were married, you were treated in a certain way for a whole range of services, including the drug scheme, which is whereby there's a limit beyond which you don't have to pay for drugs every month. And this couple were cohabiting. In every sense, they were... they should have been treated like a married couple, but they weren't. However, if there was a liability, they would have been treated same as a married couple. But where there was a benefit, they weren't. So the office engaged, it was the health boards at that time that used to actually implement these schemes, and the office engaged with the health board and didn't just get it rectified again for those people, but got all health boards to apply it in a fair manner so that cohabiting couples would be treated similar to
married couples. It's a good principle, though. If an entitlement was denied, and yet a liability would be incurred.
Yes, exactly. That doesn't. The state was winning each way there.
All right. So 5,000 cases this year. How many staff do you have, and how quickly, you know, justice delayed is justice denied, so how quickly can
Absolutely.
You sort out cases?
I'm really pleased to say that even though we have a 10% increase on this year, we're also up 10% in terms of the cases that we're closing. So we're keeping a pace with it, which is very important. We have in the region of 50 staff. The 80% of cases, we managed to resolve them in 3 months. Now, they're the ones that we resolve informally. We work very hard, Pat, to resolve the complaint informally. So we use the telephone, what I call old-fashioned innovation. We use the telephone a lot to engage with the complainant to see what is the issue and then to engage with the public service provider. So a lot of them are closed. Where it requires further investigation, we're up to about 90% are closed within 9 months.
What does a further investigation involve?
Well, that involves getting the full file. So we'll start off with a phone call to the body to say, look, was this reasonable? Do you really need to do this? Is there a better way of doing it? A full investigation is we get the full file, we get all of the papers, and we decide with that independent view of, you know, really, was this person treated properly? We look to see where the rules of a scheme applied as they should have been and all of that.
Are there ever any consequences for people who misbehave? You know, if someone is abusive on the telephone to a customer of the public service, yeah. Are there any consequences?
Well, firstly, it's important that I point out that we don't actually, if you like, investigate the individual public servant. We investigate the body. So we would make a recommendation to the body, and we would certainly even recommend maybe training would be could be necessary. But we certainly would call out bad behaviour, but it's not for us to sanction an individual.
Okay, so
it's
that person would be sanctioned within their own department.
Well, we'd hope that, you know, that's what
if discipline happen. Was called for.
Just one thing, Pat, to mention, if I could as well, the own initiative investigations we do, which are very important. So we look at not just individual complaints, but broader complaints. For example, one of the recent ones we did was in relation to the HAP scheme. We also did one on treatment abroad, where we found that there are very good schemes for people to be treated abroad if they can't get the treatment here or it's not available here.
Yeah.
But we found the schemes were being implemented way too bureaucratically. We did an investigation into this. We made recommendations to the HSE. I'm very pleased to say that all the recommendations were accepted and implemented, and that scheme now is running much better. And a real proof of that is we don't receive any or many complaints about that scheme anymore because it's being run in a patient-centred manner.
Now, the book which is published is about 40 years of the work of the Ombudsman. Where can people find it?
They can find it on ombudsman.ie and they can download it from there, or if they have any difficulty with that, if they contact us on info@ombudsman.ie. And I can also give you a telephone number if people want to do that, if they don't have another way of downloading it. And it's 01639 5600. That's 01639 5600, or they can write to us at 6 Elsford Terrace.
And are there any hard copies being published?
We will have a small number of hard copies, but we're trying to protect the environment.
Indeed. Ger Deering, Ombudsman, thank you very much for joining us in studio today.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.